honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking 76 years since the sinking and the miraculous rescue of survivors from the USS Indianapolis. The virtual reunion this last week included the first mention of Project 888, an opportunity for you to help honor the 888 men from the Indianapolis who died either in the sinking or prior to that when the ship was kamikazed. Follow the USS Indianapolis on Facebook for more information as that effort progresses. I do have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find the trailer for Sarah Vladek's 2015 documentary, USS Indianapolis, The Legacy. If you've never seen it, you will not regret pulling it up online, and this will give you a little taste.
We were never allowed to tell the disaster.
I never talked to my wife or my kids for 25 years about this.
Indianapolis changed history. It was a ship that changed history, but the men paid the price.
As far as I'm concerned, it should be told what really happened out there in the water. I started into the Navy when I was 16, and I saw all 10 battles.
I saw the flag raised, Mount Suribachi.
I personally helped load and unload components of the atomic bomb.
On the 30th of July, we were hit by two torpedoes from a submarine and sunk.
Next thing I know, the ship's going right out from under me.
All I did was just walk over the side of the ship and into the water.
I didn't jump off the ship. The ship left me.
I opened my eyes under the water, and I could see this ship was coming down on top of me.
I never did know how to swim, and the Navy never taught me how to swim.
And here's all these sharks going around. Come right across your legs like that.
It was chaos.
We couldn't understand why we weren't rescued.
A lot of them lost the will to live.
You look at their eyes, they're lost. You see people, and they're not there.
Us guys decided, well, hell, this is where we're going to die.
Then, there on that fourth day, I said, I hear a plane. And we began to splash water, we began to yell, we began to pray, everything. And seemingly, when he got to a point that had he gone any further, he would have gone over. But you know what he did? He made a dive.
How did I make it with nothing to eat, no water to drink, no sleep for 5 nights? Tell them the Lord was with me.
If somebody wrote this up as fiction, nobody would believe it happened.
People don't realize the politics in the armed forces.
All the headlines were about the captain being court-martialed.
Many a head should have rolled before they ever got to the captain.
It's the story that's not been told. Those don't want to remember. They don't want to recall this. It's too much. But I'm a dummy. I think it ought to be told.
It should be told, and it is told so powerfully in that documentary, USS Indianapolis, The Legacy, and in the best-selling book by Sarah Vladek and Lynn Vincent, not to mention books by Doug Stanton and Dan Kurzman. One man mentioned in all of those is Harpo Salaya. Like Harold Bray, Harpo was just 18 years old, and here's what he remembers about the ship being torpedoed.
I had gone to, in my compartment, and they had some vents that bring air down. And it was very hot in those days, and I had gone to sleep down there below, but I had my crew chief, which came down looking for me and came over and tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't I go up on top deck? He said, and our watch goes from 4 to 8. He said, and we can wake each other up. And so I went with him, and we went up. But there wasn't a place upstairs that you could lay on. It was, all the sailors were upstairs because it was very hot. But I remember I always used to sleep with a blanket on. Everybody used to make fun of me because I did that, but I was got used to it, and my crew chief was laughing at when we went to bed, and that's where I was when they repeated it. The big explosion happened right where I was at. The thing that saved me was a blanket that I had on, because when I woke up, there was no blanket. fire had taken it off.
Were you burned at all?
I had burns on my legs and my hands were, I had my hands out, but my hair was almost all gone. My eyelashes were gone there then. So it was a big, a pretty good sized blast, and it killed a lot of sailors around me. The only thing that saved me, I think, was the blanket.
Well, this was just 4 days after you guys had gotten to Tinian with that important cargo.
Yeah.
Of course, and you still didn't know what that was, but what a way to wake up with your hair burned off, your eyebrows burned off, the blanket blown off of you. And that ship, this huge cruiser with 1,200 men on board, sunk in just 12 minutes?
12 minutes.
What was that 12 minutes like for you?
Well, I ran to the back of it, and then that's where I met with my friend Santos Peña. I didn't have a life jacket. I didn't have anything with me. In fact, I only had my T-shirt and that, and my shorts. I didn't have shoes. I have nothing. And I told Santos, I got to go down below, Santos, because I don't have a life jacket. And he said, you can't. He said, the ship is going down. I said, I just came from the front of it. He said, the whole front end is gone. He said, I said, what? He said, oh, yeah. He says, it's going to go. So I stayed with him. We both jumped off. When I hit the water, I hit something, and I thought I had hit Santos. And I thought I'd killed him, you know. So I didn't see Santos for 3 days. I had always thought I had knocked him out or something. But after 3 days, we met up with another group, and here he was. I found him there.
Well, those have to be the three longest days of your life. And this is one of the most incredible parts of this story. For more than 3 days, the Navy didn't know that you had sunk. Is that something that you've been able to make sense of since it happened?
I haven't. I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and a lot of them say that there was a couple of ships that got an SOS, and they knew about it and stuff like that. But it's just one of those things, and I happen to be very lucky to have met later on the pilot that found us in the water. And we got pretty close, and I enjoyed meeting him afterwards. Everybody at the reunions, all the survivors there, they called him our angel. You know, he was the angel that happened to come by. And he just happened to be going by there. I mean, not looking for us or nothing. Another couple of days, and I don't think they'd have found anything. They'd have just found the oil slicks or something like that.
Well, and that was my next question, because obviously it was too late for quite a few, and they estimate that only about 300 of the 1,200 died when the ship was hit, and so then you have almost 900 men who are out in the water trying to survive, and if you're just trying to survive the conditions, that's bad enough. You got to stay hydrated, you have to stay afloat, but when you have sharks in the water killing people, I can't imagine what that was like for you. Did you see fellow sailors being eaten by sharks?
Yeah, that was kind of rough. I couldn't imagine myself. I mean, it was hard for me to, I stayed, I guess, I would say about 27 years without saying anything about it. I never talked to anybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
If they asked me something about it, I turn around and walk the other way. But nowadays, I have learned to cope with it, so I haven't been able to talk to people and stuff like that.
How did you survive, and how close did you come to having a shark take off a piece of you?
Well, I saw the shark coming around. I mean, everybody would, when they say sharks, they start kicking and all that stuff. And I kind of stayed in the middle of everything, and except when I found Santos Peña, I went around and went over to look for him. But otherwise, they had nets hanging on there, but the nets were very rough on you because the ocean was pretty rough. So on the nets, I would get in between the nets and swim with it. So that helped me quite a bit, too.
And I imagine the day that you were rescued in August of 1945 has to be the greatest day of your life, because none of the rest of the days would have happened if that day didn't happen. How did they get you out of there, and
well,
how great did that feel?
Kind of a dazed deal. I mean, because they come down with landing barges to pick you up with a hook, you know, and put you up in the landing bar. And then when they took you right up next to the ship that was going to put you in, which the Bassett ocean was so rough that the landing barge was going up and down all the time. And so they had to put a kind of a hammock deal, you know, the deal that they put down put you in there and tie you up, and then they haul you up to the top. I remember the sailors that took care of me. They were on this basset ship. Oh, they did a heck of a job. They gave me a little glass of water, probably about two swallows, and I told them, no. I said, want more? No, no, you can't have it. So little by little, they got me back on.
They knew you couldn't handle that much, and yeah. I have to imagine you hadn't had anything to eat or drink for more than 3 days, right?
Oh, 4 days. Well, all the time I was there, I never had anything to eat or to drink.
So I imagine there had to be plenty of moments where you thought you were going to die.
I thought so.
How did you keep hope alive? I mean, were you out there praying? Were you trying to talk to other people?
Everybody was praying, but I had them. My mother had gotten me a St. Anthony medal.
Mm-hmm.
And that medal that she gave me, I put it in my mouth.
Mm.
That medal stayed in my mouth all the time. I can remember that.
Well, clearly you feel blessed to have survived, one of just a few more than 300 survivors of a ship of 1,200.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I know that you're reminded of it every year about this time, and I'm sure it doesn't change from year to year how thankful you are. But I want to get a sense of how tough it was for you to recover, because when your body goes through something like that, it does take a while to recover from those extreme circumstances. How long did it take you to get back to health?
About 4 months, three or four. I spent 3 months in Long Beach Naval Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays they call it something else, post-traumatic or whatever.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Uh-huh. In those days they called it, they said you were crazy or something like that. You know, they didn't bring up this the way they put it up now. You know.
I know you're often reminded about July 30th, 1945, the day the Indianapolis went down. When you think about all the men who lost their lives there, is there a way that you honor them, or their memory, or a way that you think they ought to be remembered?
When they asked me about these young boys from Iraq coming in, which are 18, 19 years old, and I go back to them and I tell them, you know, in 44, 45, when I was in the service, they say, these boys were only 18 or 19 years old. They were fighting in World War II. God, and they were fighters. God, I wouldn't. They fought a hell of a war, you know, in 1940. And they were young men. They were not. You'd figure that they were older men, but they weren't.
To me, it's the best thing that has come out is the documentary that has come out. That's the closest that I've seen that has been the best telling of how the survivors came out of it and all that stuff. And she interviewed quite a few survivors, so she did a very good job on doing the documentary on that, you know. I remember when we first came out, when the war was over, there were very small little articles about it, you know, about the how many shipmates we had lost and stuff like that. Well, very small articles, and it wasn't very well known until most of these books started coming out, you know, Fatal Voyage and all those other ones that came in. And now that Sarah has come out with this documentary has been up in Europe and stuff like that being shown and everything.
And I remember the first time that we spoke years ago, you said that there were parts of this that still came back to you and bothered you. Does that still happen to you?
It's been bothering me for all the time. I mean, this doesn't go away. I mean, the Veterans Administration has sent so many psychiatrists and everybody to come over and talk to me and everything. And everyone's tried to say that, tried to forget, tried to do that. And you can't do that. That comes to you almost every day. You can't go to bed at night and not think about it. I don't think I'll ever forget that until they put me on the ground.
And, of course, we hope that day is a long way off. That is Harpo Salaya, one of just five remaining survivors of the USS Indianapolis. I know I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. The USS Indianapolis page on Facebook is definitely worth a follow if this story fascinates you the way it does me. That's all the time we have on Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.